Hello, welcome to Adventure with Words, where we explore storytelling in all its forms. I'm Rob.
I'm Kate.
And after a shortish-ish break, we're back again.
I know we've been sort of doing the we're back thing a couple of times, but we really are back this time. We have got various social engagements coming up, but we'll make sure we find a way to podcast around them. We're going to have podcasts every week for you, because I think when we went to every other week, it made us very lazy about it. So we shall try to be bringing you more content. So every week we'll talk about what we either have been reading or what we're just about to read, and kind of anything that we've been sent. We'll try and talk about something topical, news or an event we've been to or something like that, and hopefully we'll sort of get back into the swing of things for you.
So we'll start off with an event we went to yesterday. This was the Emerald Street Literary Festival. It was the second year that we've been. It's at the Royal Geographical Society in London. Very nice, very spunky building. And we went to three different events. It's kind of spread out over one day. So it's a one-day festival.
Yeah. So there were eight possible sessions across the day. The first ones all started at midday. Then you had them sort of spread out a little bit so you could pick and choose which you wanted to go to. But all our four events were actually in the theatre, but there were things like a Bailey's Prize panel. There were kind of various perhaps slightly less well-known authors who were doing a sort of like Emerald Street Presents, so it's like sort of introducing you to them. So it was Daisy Johnson, Cozy Fanny Tucci, who's an artist, Elif Shafak, and Robin Dalton. There were some workshops, top five writing tips from the Faber Academy. There was one about telling true stories with a couple of journalists. There was Show a Witch Some Respect, Why We're So Fascinated by Witchcraft. I thought it was quite interesting. And that was actually run by two women who I think are both from Essex, Sid Moore and Beth Underdown, and also a travel writing workshop. But as I said, we were in the theatre, so we saw the Bailey's Prize panel, which was called Why Do We Love to Talk About Books? And that was with Naomi Alderman, who won this year's Bailey's Prize with her novel The Power, and then also the author of Stay With Me, Eobami Adebayo. Sorry. Yeah,
we've got the programme in front of us. Nicely.
Yeah, I just wasn't looking at the right page. And then we also heard, talking about race in today's Britain, and that was with a couple of the people who were actually featured in The Good Immigrant, Coco Khan and Rennie Edo-Lodge. And Rennie also has a new book out, which is called Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race. And there was an extract, which I tweeted, that was in The Guardian a couple of weeks ago. And then we heard Sarah Perry talking, rather than like specifically about the Essex Serpent, talking kind of a bit more widely about how she writes, why she writes, a bit more sort of about herself as a writer. I thought it was really interesting.
Mm. So the Baileys always seems to start off the festival, well, certainly does for us. And it also ends the Bailey's Prize for that year. So it's always nice to hear from the winner and also someone who's shortlisted. Now, you've read Naomi Alderman's The Power, haven't you?
I have. I absolutely loved it. Really, really enjoyed it. It's this. So like, if you like kind of dystopian fiction, or if you find The Handmaid's Tale really interesting, I'd highly recommend reading The Power. It's quite a straightforward read, but it's in terms of the language and getting into it, but in terms of the plot, it's quite challenging. It's sort of a what would it be like if women ruled the world, but also it's kind of saying like this is actually what it's like for women with men ruling the world. So it's like, what, you know, how would people react if the power balance suddenly shifted, if women suddenly had power? And in the book, she gives them an actual power that loads of women suddenly find that they have. So it's really interesting, like the reaction of the men and how society, you know, it's sort of, it's shining a light on the patriarchy, but it's also a really exciting story.
Is it quite a nicer compliment to The Handmaid's Tale in the same way that Brave New World is sort of the opposite of 1984?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So it's, like, those two are, you know, those sort of classic dystopias, you know, very much to do with control of language and that sort of paranoia. I mean, people always, like, people know about the idea of Big Brother, which is obviously from 1984. And yeah, these are, so The Handmaid's Tale is predicated on, like, an extreme version of what, of the world we actually live in now, where, you know, Atwood said all of the things in The Handmaid's Tale are really happening somewhere, not just all in the same place. So a very, very religiously strict government, hugely restricting women's rights in general, but specifically controlling their reproduction, because the idea is that this is kind of in response to an environment where loads of women are no longer fertile. So something has happened, you know, whether it's sort of too much use of chemicals or nuclear, you know, power or whatever it might be, that's never quite explained, but something has happened that means that most women are no longer fertile, and so they're repressed by the patriarchy, essentially. And this is a bit like the opposite of that, that what if it's sort of suddenly flipped and suddenly women had the power rather than men? So yeah, I think if you are interested in that kind of thing at the moment and you haven't already read it, I would highly recommend reading it. I think it's really fascinating.
I'm certainly considering it. I thought it was really interesting. You know, it's the Bailey's winner, and it's just one of those books that I think that ticks off a few boxes for me, I think. Weird. Yeah.
I've got a copy of Stay With Me, as I mentioned. It's kind of, it's on a shelf on the other side of the room, which is why I couldn't read the author's name properly. But I've heard loads of people telling me that that's really, really good. So I will get round to reading that too.
I should probably say Kate was, you know, eagerly live tweeting away the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go back and look through it. So we can kind of just talk through the highlights of the rest of the panel. So I thought the talking about race in today's Britain was really good. It was a sold out panel as well, which is great to see.
Absolutely packed in that theatre. It was completely full. And I think it was really good that the panellists were not bothered about trying to sort of spare anyone's feelings. They were talking really openly about their own experiences in Britain nowadays. I thought Rennie was really interesting, almost from quite an academic point of view, that she shared statistics about how there is absolutely structural racism in our institutions. So, you know, like young black boys being given lower marks for basically the same work in school, you know, all sorts of things like that. And it definitely makes me want to read her new book. And despite the title, because, I mean, she was saying it's not that she won't talk to any white people anymore, but it, you know, she explains in the opening of this book, which is the extract that was in The Guardian, that she's just fed up of having to kind of go out of her way to accommodate white people's feelings about this when it's actually nothing to do with white people. You know, they are othering black people. They're making themselves the normal in inverted commas. And she's just fed up with having to put up with that all the time, which seems absolutely fair enough to me.
I thought it was a great panel. I thought Coco, I didn't know, I hadn't heard, really heard of her before. Very funny. And I'd seen Rennie's book everywhere. It's got a fantastic cover. So I'm certainly going to pick those two up as well. And I guess we ended our day anyway on a talk with Sarah Perry and Lucy Manigan talking about, it was about the Essex Serpent, but it's also about a bit further than that. So obviously I'm a big, big fan of the Essex Serpent. It's great to hear Sarah actually read from it and just talk about how the book came about her very sort of strict religious upbringings, how I suppose she kind of just, she said, she's been described in the past as being a bit eccentric, but she just sort of embraces that idea. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant. And it was very, very enlightening. Now, you haven't quite got around to reading it yet, but what did you think? But you have read her first book.
So yes,
read
I have. One each, yeah.
Actually, yes.
I've said this many times that how much I loved After Me Comes the Flood. And she did say she thought, in a way, they were quite different, because that book is very much more about ideas, and it doesn't have loads of plot, whereas The Essex Serpent has a much clearer plot. But I'm really looking forward to reading it. I really am. She read some sections from the openings because she explained it's split between London and the Essex countryside. So she sort of read a bit from each, you know, the first time you go to each of those places effectively. And the writing is really just the kind of thing that I really like, really descriptive. I love writing that really evokes the place. And I have a feeling that this is going to do that. But I mean, that's the same, really, I thought, as After Me Comes the Flood, because although you're never told exactly where the place is, I could see this big house in my mind with the, you know, big grassy gardens and so on and the water nearby. I could really picture that in my head, even though it is a very different type of book. And I'm very intrigued actually to see what her next book is going to be. She mentioned that she's writing at the moment, and I thought it was very interesting as well that she said that she's had quite a tough time lately with being ill and so on. She almost feels like she's just a different person now. It's changed her so much. She said she feels like the Sarah Perry who wrote The Essex Serpent is dead, and so it's quite a scary experience writing this new book, because it's like she's sort of starting completely afresh. So I'm intrigued to see if the new book will be something very different as well.
Well, certainly to experience the massive high of all the success and the plaudits from The Essex Serpent, and then to really being quite seriously ill and, you know, in quite amount of pain, that whole year basically where The Essex Serpent has been out must have been an incredibly difficult one to get through.
Sort of roller coaster experience.
And of course there's now going to be a lot more eyes on the next book as well.
Yes, true. But although lots of people who are also very excited for it, you know.
Yes, well, that's kind of what I meant, is that there's now, it's going to be, because I remember The Essex Serpent when it kind of was first, you know, being talked about.
Yeah.
And obviously that very distinctive packaging. And then it was very much embraced when it came out, to as it rightly should be. So, yes. So you went and bought yourself a copy yesterday, didn't you?
I actually did. I thought that Sarah might be staying to sign some books. So I did go and buy myself a copy. I got the Waterstones blue edition with all the gold foil on it. But she wasn't staying, so that was a bit of a shame. But now I have my own copy that I can read. I won't have to keep hanging on to yours. So you can have yours back.
I have mine back.
Which is obviously the most important thing. So there we go. Yeah, we had a really good day. There was one final session in the theatre, which was The Moth, which if you watch Girls, you might have seen Hannah taking part in a moth session. But basically, that's where people come along and they tell a true story from their lives. You have 5 minutes. There's normally a theme. But in the end, we decided it was such a beautiful day. We went for a walk in Hyde Park to enjoy that, so we didn't just miss out on it. But so if you went to that, I hope you had a really good time.
So we thought we'd catch up a little bit on what we've been reading. Now, I had a period of time where I was reading lots of top secret manuscripts for work, so I couldn't really talk about them. But I have actually been finishing a few things. So I've actually read one thing that I publish and one thing that you publish.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah. So, but then, of course, now we have to do the now legendary... How many books are you going to talk about?
Well, I was just going to mention a few.
Because... Do you want to start mentioning a few? Yeah.
I won't go into these in loads of detail, because what I've been trying to do is actually to write at least a short review, like a couple of paragraphs on Goodreads, just as I go along. So I thought I'd just sort of highlight a few of the things that I have been reading. So I read one of yours, Gather the Daughters by Jenny Melamed, which again is a sort of, I think that's out quite soon actually.
I saw finished copies in the office on Friday.
It is out. So I'm just looking at Goodreads now. It's out in July, end of July. So this again has a sort of Handmaid's Tale-y sort of feel to it, for me. So it's a group of people who live on an island, and it's a very, very religious community, and they talk about the rest of the world being lost in fire, basically. And it sounds like a very kind of very biblical thing, although I wondered if maybe they were referring to some kind of nuclear holocaust or something like that. But anyway, these people just live on this island, and that, like, towards the beginning, there are mentions of something a bit odd happening with the girl, and you realise that the young girls, the teenage girls, get married off when they're really quite young, because this community also has this real problem with babies being born, that babies do get born, but there's often something wrong with them, and then they die. So, and again, you're not quite sure why that is, but you start to realise, actually, it's because the community is really small. So maybe it's to do with them being inbred. And then you also start to realise there's something not right with the way that the girls are being treated by the men on the island. And that kind of causes rumours to start circulating, and eventually the girls start to rebel. But I won't say anything more than that because I don't want to spoil anything. But I thought that was great. I really, really enjoyed that. I've read Frog Kisser by Garth Nix. He's the guy who wrote the Old Kingdom series for teenagers, and Frog Kisser is for people who are a bit younger than that, maybe sort of around 10-ish. But it's got a great female lead character who's sort of very adventurous, and she starts off wanting to be a sorcerer. Because that's what her uncle is. He's very evil, but she's more intrigued by kind of learning, and she likes the idea of having power and so on. But she's also a princess, and she realizes that her uncle is actually probably going to take over the country if he can, so she has to sort of go out and try and stop him. And she's accompanied by one of the royal dogs who can talk.
Ooh.
Who I imagined as a sort of golden retriever or something like that.
But like Doug from
That's probably why I thought of him, right, like that. Yeah. But they can naturally talk, these royal dogs. So I thought you might quite like that. Tin Man by Sarah Winman, which I thought was absolutely beautiful. So, so beautiful. It's really short, but it's really, really poignant. Loads of people are talking about that. And there's lots of great reviews online already. So is that out already, or is that quite soon?
Soon. So that's one of mine.
Yeah. That's why I'm asking from. What other interesting things have I read? I've read Doing It by Hannah Witten, which is actually a non-fiction, a sort of guide to relationships for teenagers. I thought that was really well done, actually. It's got a really great tone to it, very open, very friendly, but it's also clearly had a lot of research done to make sure it's all accurate. And there are a few books that I would recommend. They're Juno Dawson's books, the sort of sex education books. So she wrote How to Be a Boy and also How to Be Gay. There's a great book by Hayley Long called Being a Girl. And there's more and more of these around at the moment. Those three are all published by Hot Key. But Doing It, the Hannah Witten book, is published by, I think it's called Wren and Rook. Yes. Wren and Rook, which is a new Hodder sort of teen non-fiction.
It's a new imprint. They're downstairs, if that's any help to anyone. New children's imprint.
Yeah, but it's non-fiction. Yes. I'd really recommend that. I thought that was great. The other one that I think a lot of people recommend is one called Girl Up by Hannah Bates, who wrote Everyday Sexism.
Laura Bates?
Laura Bates. Getting so many people's names wrong today. I'm really sorry.
That's just me. That might be me getting it wrong as well. Anyway,
we'll move on. I'm saying that off the top of my head because I haven't read it. What other ones did I want to just quickly mention? I read Release by Patrick Ness, which is absolutely brilliant. That is set... I mean, it's actually very much based on Patrick's own growing up. So he grew up in a very religious household. But it's set with one boy who, as Patrick did, grows up in a very religious household. His dad is actually a sort of, I don't know, fundamental Christian is not quite the right, like kind of born again Christian, you know, and that he actually describes this little town in the middle of the woods, in the middle of nowhere, where there's these two almost like competing churches, which I thought was quite funny. But the boy is gay, and it's kind of like set over one day, a bit like Mrs. Dalloway. That's the idea anyway. and it's sort of the things that happen to him and change, like sort of quite dramatic things just over the course of one day. And then on the other side, there's a sort of nature spirit who's been disturbed because of quite traumatic thing that happened. And she is sort of out to try and put things right as well. And the two things sort of overlap. It's really beautiful. What else did I just want to mention? I read a couple of the Wolves of Mercy Falls books by Maggie Stiefvater because I've had them on my shelf for ages and I just fancied something fun. Shiver and Linger. Yeah, they're sort of good fun. That's kind of a werewolf story. American YA. That's most amusing. And I also read a couple of vintage books which are out in January 2018. So I read them way ahead of publication, but thought they were both amazing in very different ways. The Mermaid and Mrs. Hancock, which I'm sure is going to be one of those ones that I keep mentioning, so I won't go into loads of detail about it here. And then also White Chrysanthemum by Mary Lynn Bracht, which is about set in the Japanese occupation of Korea, and it's about comfort women, which is the word that was the kind of euphemism for women who were taken from their families and effectively forced to be prostitutes. So it does not sound very jolly, but it's really beautifully written, and it's not jolly, it's very serious, but it's a really wonderful story. So there we go. So yeah, loads of things. That's all on my Goodreads. And I'm trying to put little comments on there as I go, so that I don't miss out on anything.
So one book that I did read, which is actually one that I do am helping out with publishing, though, this is Yesterday by Felicia Yap, and it's How Do You Solve a Murder When You Only Remember Yesterday? Now, it's kind of, so it's a bit like a thriller with a mild sci-fi twist, but it's set now, and the book's actually set in the UK, mostly around Cambridge. But the idea is that when you turn 18, something happens to your brain, to your memories, and you're either a mono or a duo. So a duo can remember what's happened over the last 2 days, and a mono can only remember the day before. So it automatically sets up sort of this class system, and everyone has to rely on writing things down in their diaries. And it's kind of intercut with bits about sort of government, pretend government advice on how to cope with this transitioning. It's also sort of like news cuttings. There's a press release because Apple released what's called the iDiary. So in the past, everyone was writing down their diaries by hand. And now you've got like an iPad and you're writing down what happened to you the day before. And there are bits where people are sort of searching to see if they remember in their little electronic diaries. Anyway, there's a murder. A body is discovered, and it sort of flits between three different sort of viewpoints. Actually, four. One of there's a husband and wife. The husband is trying to run for parliament, and he is a duo, and he's married a mono. And this is a very big controversial thing. You know, should monos mix with duos? If you have children, are you going to inflict being a mono upon them? As mono is, you're basically seen as a lesser person. And there's a police officer who has to try and solve the case of the murder by the end of the day, because monos aren't allowed to be a police officers or detectives. Sorry, he's kept this fact hidden from all his superiors. And so it's a very good twisty turny thriller, but it's sort of got this twist to it. But it doesn't, I wouldn't describe it as science fiction or anything like that. It's just sort of a concept thriller, I suppose. And it works really well, and it asks you a lot of questions about, even if you do, obviously, a lot of people, their memories forms what they are, but obviously what you write in your own diary, you know, are you're writing it from a certain perspective? And it was really good fun, actually, and it sort of kept me guessing right the way up to the end. And I kind of liked that idea that it often questions, because you know how I've said about, I don't trust a first person narrator, yes, because they're telling it from a certain perspective. This kind of plays around with that, because obviously people can only remember certain things, and they're having to rely on what they tell themselves back, you know, years and years and years ago. So I thought it was really good fun, actually. Cambridge felt, from the vague times that I've been there, fairly accurate, so maybe you'll have a better idea than I do. But this is it. Yeah, I genuinely enjoyed it, and it's out in August in hardback on the 10th.
I'm intrigued why you wouldn't call it science fiction. Because I think that's exactly science fiction.
I call it that because I think the main plot that drives it through is whodunit. It's much more. It's just a thriller with that sort of element. I wouldn't call it. I guess it kind of is because it's set now, but I don't. It never really sort of. It just felt completely normal. I don't know.
But then the best science fiction should feel normal. I think you don't want to call it science fiction because you think you don't like science fiction.
Well, I like. Well, I said before, I like science fiction that makes a point. So maybe this is why.
But there is like science fiction is anything that has a sort of what if. So what if people could only remember one or two days?
Yeah. We'll call it a sci-fi thriller with lowercase sci-fi and uppercase.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, what you're saying is it's not set in space.
Well, no, I'm not trying to get that. What I'm trying to get was if you like crime and you like thrillers and detective fiction, this will still work for you. It's just a different setting.
Yeah.
And it plays around with those concepts. Yeah.
Excellent.
That's the way I would describe it. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, it's very much that. Anyway, and then the book I've just started, which is about a quarter of the way through, is if you've been listening to us for quite some time, you'll remember that both Kate and I and Simon and Gav of the Readers we all absolutely loved HHHH by Lauren Binet, which was we did a joint book club on it, I think it was.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
Which was very much, that was a Second World War thriller, but Lauren Binet, or what we think is Lauren Binet, is very much a part of that story.
Sort of interjecting to tell us about how he's writing it and how he's getting interested by different characters and stuff like that.
And it had the two timelines, the story set in the past and the story what was set sort of around our time. Anyway, this is the new one, which is the seventh language of function.
Seventh function of language.
Seventh function of language. Anyway, I can never remember the name of this. I always call it the new Lauren Binet. But yeah, it's called...
which it is, so...
Which describes itself on the front as the cerebral new thriller from the author of HHHH. Mm-hmm. So about a quarter of the way in. Now, this is ticking quite a lot of boxes from probably when I was at uni and you were at uni mm-hmm. doing literary theory.
Yeah.
The main sort of part that kicks off the plot is the death of Roland Barthes, and he is run over in the middle of the street, and he claims that something was stolen from him. Mm-hmm. I'm presuming it's a document or something. It's something he has in his pocket anyway. Mm-hmm. And then, so the police start to investigate, and they're very much being followed around by somebody, and it gets very much into the role of literary theory, of sort of semantics. And
are we getting towards a conceptual shark sort of place?
Yeah, not quite. Kate's referring to the Rorschach texts, which was, that was nuts. This is not quite so nuts, but it wasn't good. It was fun.
I would recommend anyone to read the Rorschach texts. That's not Rorschach, as in the tests, but it's, I can't remember the name of the author
Stephen
now.
Hall.
Oh, well done. It's a guy is being chased by a conceptual shark, kind of made out of the stories and words that have been written in books. Yeah.
A great white shark attacks him. At one point it comes through his living room carpet and he has to defend himself with tape recorders. And anyway, it's absolutely brilliant. So I'm about a quarter of the way through this. There's a lot less of the Binet-ish character so far. So far, it's focusing mostly on the police investigation, which I kind of miss. I don't know if that's going to come back. As I said, I'm only a quarter way through, but it's good fun. It's making me try to remember, you know, the literary theory courses at university. It's a very funny, kind of quirky book, but I think if you enjoyed his first book, then this is, so far for me, this is really good fun.
Excellent. And I'm glad you're enjoying it.
And it's out now, I believe.
Yes, it is out now. It's got particularly excellent writing about, like, a description on the back of the advanced review copy, which I thought was particularly fun.
The book proof's copy, of course, alludes to the arcane study of semiotics. It aims to pique the interests of the esoteric reader and flatter them by not stooping to mention the novel's many glamorous locations, celebrity cameos, action-packed car chases, and sinister secret societies. It focuses ultimately on the death of Roland Barthes and a conspiracy involving continental philosophy, Russian adventurism, and the terrible power of language. It's a very playful book.
Mm.
It's a lot of fun, and you know, I have been going on about literary theory, but I don't think that needs to put anybody off. It's not like an academic text. It's an absolute riot. I had to put it down for about a week because I had to read other things, but I'm quite itching to get back into it. So fingers crossed as I go through it, it lives up to his other one.
Indeed. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
Cool. So bit of a whistle-stop tour there, but we're sort of trying to catch you up to date with where we are so that we can start afresh next week. I really enjoyed doing that. I'm glad that we're back.
Yes. So we'll aim to be back next week. We are going to a wedding. But
I'm sure we'll manage something.
We will find the time to,
we certainly will.
Record something. Do let us know any of your thoughts on any of those books, in case you've read them or you'd like to know more. You can send us an email, contact@adventureswithwords.com. You can tweet us @WordAdventures. We're also on Facebook. And if you can listen to this on SoundCloud. And they've now changed the name to Apple Podcasts. It's no longer iTunes. So you can leave us a review there if you so wish.
Yeah.
And you can also leave a comment under any of our blog posts. If you head over to adventurewithwords.com, you'll find a page for every episode. And there's even a voicemail option as well.
There we go. Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much for listening. Do you want to do your I'm being...
Yes. So if you want to follow me...
how to do it?
If you want to follow me during the week, you can do that. I am @RobChilva on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat.
And if you want to follow me during the week, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, mostly as @magic_kitten.
Kate's not quite embraced Snapchat. Almost bought her a pair of Snapchat spectacles.
I really like them. They look really nice. But yeah, I'd have to actually use Snapchat in that case, which I haven't been. So sorry about that. And yeah, as I mentioned, we're both on Goodreads. So you can always follow us, you know, literally as we're reading along on there as well.
That's all for this week. We'll be back next week.